Well, welcome back to the What's Your Motor podcast. Today is a very special day. I'm actually live on location for the second time. But this is someone that I've watched from afar. She worked closely with my wife, actually. So I've learned a lot of great things about her. I'm sure everything that I've been told is actually true because we've been talking at length off camera. I wish you would have caught some of that. But I have, she's a wife, a mother of two.
Yes.
A former educator. Well, I won't even say former. She's still an educator. Worked in NPS for about 7 years, special ed specifically. She went to UWM, my alma mater, so we shared that. I knew we were going to be connected through that. An entrepreneur, and one of the biggest things is that she owns this bookstore in which I am in right now called A Rooted MKE. So please join me in welcoming Ashley Valentine. How are you doing today?
Good. Hello, everybody.
Hello, hello, hello. Glad we were able to make it and be on location. This is a very nice space. I was looking at the book on the wall. I did read Corduroy as a kid, so I remember that book. So it's just nice to see all these books in here, and especially the representation that you provided here. But before we get into all that, because I'm admiring you already, tell us a little bit about Ashley.
Okay, so you said a lot already. I'm a mom, and I think I really have a passion for trying to do something different in Milwaukee for kids in a way that I think a lot of people make seem so complicated, but really it's not. Like, at the foundation, kids want to see themselves, feel important, feel valuable. And if they say they need help and they come to you and say they want support, being able to offer high quality support without excuses to make differences.
I would agree. I would agree. When you were growing up in the education space and things like that, do you remember anything like this being in the community or where you were?
I do not. Not specifically for Black kids. I do not. So I went to NPS for all of my schooling. I went to Fratney for elementary school. Okay. I was in the bilingual program at Lincoln for middle school, and then I went to high school of the arts. So most of my childhood, I was around Hispanic kids all of my school day because I was speaking Spanish, and then in feeder programs that were primarily for kids who spoke Spanish or were bilingual. And of course, in the Milwaukee area, that's mainly going to be Hispanic students. I think there were probably four other Black kids once I got into middle school who continued on in becoming bilingual. So all of our programming was centered around celebrating Hispanic people and Hispanic culture and Hispanic experiences. So I definitely did not see myself at school. Yes, there were Black students at Lincoln who I had to become friends with in my own time. Like, it was clearly intentional to keep bilingual students separate from monolingual students who were mainly Black kids. So we had a different lunch area. We could not go sit with them for lunch. We had separate gym time. We saw them during specials. So like during dance or whatever your specialty was, you were in class with monolingual students. But that was the only time. The rest of the day we were separate for all of our learning. So you see them for your specialty. And even when we went to specials, it was clear, like, okay, you know how to behave when you go to specials. You are not like the other students. We need to make sure we're upholding the values of our classroom. So it was really intentional. And it was weird because I'm Black. You're telling me that I'm different from the Black kids who I spend my time with on the bus, who I live by because I grew up on 26th and Locust. But at school, I am not them and they are not me. So it was really just a weird dynamic that I had no choice but to play into, because what am I going to do otherwise as a middle school student?
Did you recognize that as a kid, or is that like more so reflective of you thinking back? Because I went to Audubon my seventh grade year, which is primarily Hispanic. And like you said, it was only a few African-American kids, but it was mainly Hispanic. We had some Caucasian kids as well, but did you realize like that what seemed intentional, like separation, it was almost like special and then general populations? Mm-hmm. Like, did you recognize that as a kid?
I didn't recognize it directly. I recognized it when I would, most of my friends were Hispanic, because that's who I'm spending the day with. And I'm speaking Spanish and we're just girls against boys, typical thing. And I would say something in Spanish to a boy and he'd be like, but you black, you're not even Mexican, so it don't even matter. And then they'd be like, dang, I'm not. But you couldn't tell me that I wasn't going to be Selena in middle school. Man. Like, I was taking it home, listening to the music, watching Hispanic stuff on TV. And it only was after kids in my neighborhood who were like, you don't even hang out with kids that look like you during the day. Why do you want to come over our house? Or like, why do you want to play in my yard? And during the day, you don't play with black kids. It started to be clear to me, like, okay, I do live a different life at school than I do when I get off the bus on 26 and Locust, mm-hmm. and there's not a Hispanic kid in my neighborhood.
So that's a lot there, because I assume that you may have had some challenges with your identity during that time.
For sure, yes.
Because you were more so on the side of, you know, the Hispanic, you know, really embracing yourself in the Hispanic culture versus your, embracing your African-American heritage. So for the kids to actually point that out, like, did you feel offended? Did you feel like...
I felt like I was a part of them. Like, mm-hmm. we're in this experience together. Mm-hmm. But when someone was upset, it was very clear, like, wait, no, I'm not a part of what we pretend that I'm a part of when I don't make you feel bad, or I'm not making that's a joke crazy. In the same way as everybody else. Mm-hmm.
Man, that's crazy. I guess I never really thought about that when I was at Ottawa. I just went with the, but you said you were it. In that situation for how long?
K-4 through 8th grade.
Oh. So you had years and years so deeply entrenched.
Yes. And I remember in high school, we had to write a paper. And I wrote a paper about just the school experience, mm-hmm. and how it was intentional that the bilingual program was different and, like, not a part of the entirety of Lincoln. And we were treated different. The principal talked to us different. Programming was different. Just, it was like a whole, we went to two different schools, and I got in trouble for the paper because the principal that was the principal in middle school was the principal at High School of the Arts at the time. So when it was time to present the paper, my teacher showed the principal and it was a problem.
What kind of trouble did you get in?
There was a conversation.
Okay.
And my mom was brought in to the office for the conversation. And then there was like a whole, we appreciate your viewpoint kind of thing. Thank you for sharing what your thoughts are. But we want to make it clear to you that that wasn't the intention and that's not what happened. That's just how you perceive it. So let's make that clear. Do you get it? Yes or no? And of course I say, yes, I'm in trouble. My mom's here. Like, okay, yep, got it. I won't do that again.
Right.
Yes.
So you experienced that young.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to jump around, but so when you went to high school, was it a different experience? So you went to High School of Arts. My sister actually went to High School of Arts and graduated as well. So was it a different experience in High School of Arts? Because I know...
Very different, because it was no longer bilingual against monolingual students. It was like, what is your art? What is your specialty? Mm-hmm. And that's who you spend most of your day with. But... my mom was super, super strict. So right away, freshman year, it was clear to everyone, like, Ashley's really smart. Mm-hmm. She's going to get her work done. She's probably going to help you do your work if you ask, but her mom don't play, because my mom would, like, come and sit in my class. If I got a B,
in high school?
My mom was going to show up legit and sit in the back of my class to figure out, like, how is she getting a B? What is going on? She would come and check my locker, make sure it was clean. And if it wasn't, like,
in
I had to clean it up with my mom there. Yes. Everybody knew. Like, that's Ashley's mom. So.
How did that
very
make you
challenging.
Feel?
Trying to make friends and be, like, normal? Never. It was always, like, I'm sure I perceive that I have to be perfect all the time. And other kids started to make comments, like, Ashley's never going to get in trouble, or Ashley would never do that. Like, sit by Ashley. If you want to figure out what to do and you want the teacher to think you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. just sit by Ashley. And I'm sure other kids felt that. So I didn't like it. School was serious to me. It wasn't like make friends, hang out with people after school, mm-hmm. like build whatever your social capital is. No, it was like, this is a job and I have do this well, or my mama's gonna show up. Yes.
And you didn't want that to happen.
No. Who want their mom no, I to get sit that. In class I get that. With them well, as a junior? Like, embarrassing. I'm just about grown. I'm 17 and my mom's here because I gotta be.
So I haven't experienced that. My mom was the lunch lady at my middle school before. And I was like, you know, you kind of feel some kind of way, but it was like, you know, the kids, my guys actually like, oh, hey, moms, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? But she never came and sat in my room or, man, well, what was your, when you went to high school to arts, like, did you go there for, like, anything artsy?
I wanted to go for singing, but okay. My mom said, you already know how to sing, so pick something else. So I went for dance.
So you went for dance. Mm-hmm. Okay. How long did you, are you still doing dance? Like, how long did
no.
you?
No. No.
How long did you continue to do dance, though?
Nothing. Graduated. And it was a wrap. Like, this is what I do while I'm here.
Okay.
But I never thought, like, oh, I can make something of this. No. It was like, this is the assignment for the time.
Okay. And you took classes and stuff, like, mm-hmm. high school arts? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, so you never thought about, like, going to Absolutely Juilliard not. Or anything?
I knew I wasn't. I felt like I'm barely good enough to do what I'm doing right now for 3 hours a day. Because you're... specialty is like most of your day. No,
that wasn't it.
Never.
But you were there for business to get in and get out and yep. handle your business, so you didn't have moms there. Okay. So we're in the bookstore. Were you an avid reader when you were younger?
I was, yes. I always loved reading.
What was your favorite book or one of your favorite books?
One of my favorite books was, did I have a favorite book? I don't think so.
Okay. But what books do you remember?
Ooh, I loved reading. I probably shouldn't have been reading them at the time. Sister Soldier.
Sister Soldier. I kind of remember those books. I didn't read them though, but.
Yes.
Sister Soldier.
Sneak in to read because I knew I wasn't supposed to be reading it. I can't remember the name. There were two at the time. What's the name of the book? I can't remember, mm-hmm. but one and two were my favorite books ever. And I knew they were adult books and I shouldn't have been reading, but I knew my mom wasn't going to read them after me to be like, what are you reading?
Right.
So yes,
where did you get them from?
School.
From school.
I always wanted to read books about girls who were like experiencing life ahead of them, like okay. dating grown people or living out of the house or mm-hmm. doing drugs or doing all these very adult things mm-hmm. as early teenagers or teenagers, because I felt like I had to be perfect.
Okay.
So I'm going to read books about girls who like live a life of turmoil, basically,
right.
because this is not my experience and I have to be on my P's and Q's. So what is it like to just do what you want to do and suffer the consequences, whatever they were, but you're like proud of your decisions.
So you pretty much was like learning from that book, like what not to do, basically.
Yeah.
So,
or like if I could do what I want, I would date midnight too, or like all these drastic things.
So like a fantasy type yep. thing. So did you read those books and, you know, trying to make sure that your life aligned and you weren't doing those certain things? Did you see that going on around you in high school with different kids? Like, did you see that? Because I know you said like you
there were
like
for sure girls in high school dating grown men. Like that was really normal. Not like every single girl.
No,
but
right.
It would be a sophomore, a junior, and a grown man is picking you up from school. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not your dad. So why is this grown man picking up a child? And I don't think we talk about that really often as adults, but like, it was insane watching grown people pick mm-hmm. up a sophomore or a junior and like pick you up from school. And like, that's just a thing, but no one thought it was a big problem.
Yeah, I don't think we, like you said, I don't think we talk about how commonplace that was for that to happen. Thinking back, it was like when we were kids, I think, you know, you recognize it, you see it, but it was just like the girls kind of like wanted the older men. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So we just like, okay, it is what it is. But when you think back, you're like, that was wrong.
Right.
That was wrong.
Yes.
I don't know why we don't talk about it though. Because what year did you graduate from high school?
06.
06. So you right after me. So it was around that same time. I was 05. So we definitely seen that.
Yeah.
We definitely seen that. But those books did give you some insight into what was going on.
And
too,
it
right?
still didn't work because when I was a junior, my mom let me cut my hair. Ooh, I thought I was grown. I had like a little pixie cut. And I don't know how I even met this grown man. He picked me up from school. And he like, where you want to go? Why did I say McDonald's? And he's like, okay, what do you want to order?
What?
I'm getting a Mighty Kids meal. Like, sir.
No, you didn't.
I sure did. I don't know why I asked for that. What am I asking this grown man for? Where do I want to go? I'm a child. Where are we going? Where did you think I was going to say? Benihana's? I don't even know what that is. And we got my Mighty Kids meal and drove around. And I didn't think it was a problem at the time. But like, sir, you in a car with someone who you think you're pursuing and she asks you for a Happy Meal. Like your grown man radar is not like, ooh, I should take her back to school. And he had to take me back to school because my mom was still picking me up. So I had to get back to school before the end of the day. So my mom could pick me up at 3:30.
Wait, so you skipping?
Mm-hmm.
What?
I was to go to McDonald's with a grown man.
Was it like open lunch?
Mm-mm.
So you just skip?
I did.
Oh. So it's a soldier. that's a soldier.
It's what it clearly.
Right. Hey, you live and you learn. I mean, you got out of there unscathed, though. So
right?
That's the good thing.
Yes.
Because obviously we can always say it could have been worse, but at least you got it unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Got about 4 good Happy Meals out of it. And then once I learned that Happy Meals weren't a sufficient payment, it ended.
Alrighty, well. Alright, so changing gears. Obviously you fell into education, got to education. Did you always know that you wanted to be in education?
No. I became a teacher on accident.
I would say the same for me. Mm-hmm. So how did it happen?
I was working in Minnesota in business banking at Wells Fargo.
Okay.
My husband, he wasn't my boyfriend, but we were doing something between Milwaukee and Minnesota. Uh-huh. And I went to church one Sunday and someone from the church, she used to be a recruiter for MPS. She was the head of HR and we were at church and she was like, we really need teachers. Ashley, I remember you always like kids growing up in the church. Don't you want to be a teacher? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how much do it pay? And she was like, okay, give me a call on Monday and like we can work it out. So I went to MPS, met with her, had a really informal meeting about what the responsibilities are, how much I get paid, what I need to do. I didn't even have to send her a resume. She was just like, okay, so do you want to do it? I'm like, okay, I can do it. Went next door to HR. She said, what school do you want to work at? And then in the fall, I was a teacher.
You had the
no
school?
Teaching experience.
That had you had your degree yet?
I did have a bachelor's degree
okay.
in sociology.
Okay. So that was good enough to get you in the door. And then they wanted you to go through the programming.
Then like I went through the post-bac program at UWM. So she told me, like, you can either go to UWM, CESA, MTech, just a couple different options. And I was like, okay, I'll just go to UWM. Because I went there. I was familiar. I knew where to park to not get a ticket. I'm like, I can do that. And she's like, all right. Well, you start in the fall. There's 2 weeks of training. And then you'll be in a class. And I was like, okay, well, I'll be an assistant. Like, what am I going to be doing? And she's like, no, it's your class. What do you want to teach? And I'm like, well, let's do elementary and just see how it works. I don't want to do bigger kids because I don't know what I'm doing. So like, let's start out with someone who's going to give me a little window to figure it out. And I was teaching fourth grade in the fall and I moved back to Milwaukee.
So you taught fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then what other grades did you teach?
Fourth grade and then middle school special ed. So sixth, seventh, and eighth.
Sixth, seventh, and eighth. Okay. And when you taught fourth grade, you taught all subjects.
I thought that's what I was going to be doing. But at the school that I went to, the principal had decided there's 2 fourth grade classes. One teacher is going to teach the math, the science. The other teacher is going to teach the reading, social studies, writing.
You did
that? So I did the reading.
Okay. and obviously you love reading, so
yes.
That was the thing that fell into it.
Yes.
You don't really care for math, right?
I can do math now. I think being a special ed teacher, mm-hmm. I can do math because I didn't feel like I have to know it. That sounds horrible, but like
listen.
Y'all don't know it. Listen, I don't know it. We can take it slow together and it's gonna be fine. Listen,
I hear you. I hear you, but I'm a literacy teacher through and through. Don't put me in front of no math like that.
No. You know?
Especially not fractions. I don't do fractions.
I can do it now.
I follow somebody on Instagram that shows me how to do fractions. He's really cold.
Instagram. You get in front of the kids based off what you learned on Instagram.
Well, yeah. To a certain extent.
That's your PD. I guess it works.
There you go. Free it worked PD. For me. It's really for me, though.
Okay.
Because I never was good at fractions. But, you know, you got to do what works for you, right?
Yep.
And like you said, you learned on the way with them. I mean, sometimes they can't tell anyway.
Right.
Which is good, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It actually makes the teaching a little bit more pure.
That's what I thought. I loved it because the first day, the kids were asking all the questions. Where you come from? What school were you at before? And I'm like, look, this is my first year teaching. So, like, let's set the tone together.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
All I want is to be respected, and I'm going to respect you. I don't know everything. You're going to teach me something. I'm going to teach you something. And if I don't know, I promise we'll learn it together. I'm never going to pretend like I know what I'm doing if I don't. And I loved it because I felt like a pressure relieved. I think in general, kids think the teacher is like Google. They can just ask you whatever.
And you got
and you it. Nope. The kids knew right away. Don't do me like that.
Right.
You asked me, we got a smart board. Let's look it up together. I don't know.
You know, I'm glad you just said that because a lot of times kids do think teachers know everything. And if you could be transparent and let them know, like, no, I don't know everything. We might have to look this up. We might have to do some research. And I didn't recognize that until I got to college. My sister, I'll always give her praise for this. But I was going to school and I was telling her, like, you know, my first year in college, I'm like, man, the teacher is so smart. And she was like, yeah, that's wonderful, but don't believe everything without going to research and validate it because they don't know everything. Sometimes it's just their opinion and perspective. So for you to even tell them, like, yeah, you can come to me, but I don't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's great because sometimes I think a lot of teachers pose as if they do know everything and may even get offended if a student challenges them. Did you ever get offended when a kid challenged you?
No. Now, if they try to embarrass me, it's a problem. But if you are just like, Ms. Valentine, I don't think that's right. Okay, show me. Like, what part did I get wrong?
Right.
Where did I mess up? Now, if you are, like, belligerent and just like, oh, my God, how did you get that? I told you I didn't know. How did you let me work this far?
Right.
But I'm speaking up. Why are you wasting our time?
Right.
You know, why are you wasting all of our time?
Right, right, right. That's so funny. Now, before I transition to my next question, I know you said you were special ed.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a conversation with my buddy last night. He actually was over and his son has special needs. So from your perspective, like, what was it like being a special ed teacher?
I really loved being a special ed teacher more than general education. I think the class size makes so much of a difference. If you give me 35 kids who need me and they are not where you say they need to be anyway, like we're in fourth grade and a majority of my class is reading at a second grade level. Most of the stuff you give me to do with the kids is not applicable. So I have to tailor it to what the kids need. I'm pulling in extra resources. Mm-hmm. That's difficult. If I'm doing special education and I get to decide how many kids are in my room at a time and the learning objectives are tailored to exactly what they need, that is way more beneficial in terms of time, in terms of what they're going to take away from it, in terms of measuring their progress towards goals that make sense for them. That makes significantly more sense to me than expecting kids who you know are not performing where you need them to be to meet these standards that we know are above what they are currently capable of doing. Right. And then measuring them on those things. So even if they do make progress, it's not enough to say that they're proficient or it's not enough to say that they're meeting the grade level standard. So they still feel like whatever I'm doing is not good enough. No matter how much you celebrate it and say good job, when my parent gets the paper, everyone knows that it's not mm-hmm. enough.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough to dig out those holes, like when you're behind, when those kids are behind, and you don't want to give them any false hope. But like mm-hmm. you said, you want to supplement and try to use the best use of that time to actually give them what they need, you know, to even try it. Like you said, you can celebrate it, but it's tough for them to see it and give it back to their parent and be like, yeah, I'm there, but I'm not all the way there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, because I know my buddy is going through that in terms of just dealing with the IEP process, mm-hmm. trying to make sure he has the accommodations as he goes through school. And then just trying to navigate it as a parent. You know, sometimes it's hard to get that news that the kid has a certain issue or maybe having his deficit and things like that. So appreciate that perspective for sure.
No problem.
So what made you start the bookstore? And what does Rooted mean?
Okay. What made me start the bookstore? I love teaching and mm-hmm. supporting students, but the way that I was doing it as a teacher, I felt like it wasn't really making sense. Like, how many jobs do you work where you're doing something and you're working towards something and you're not meeting the outcome mm-hmm. as outlined by your job description, but you just keep doing the same thing and using the same methods. Mm-hmm. And then if you're bold enough to say, I think we should do something else, or I think we should consider other things, there's always an excuse like, oh, but we don't have enough time. Oh, but there's not enough resources. Oh, but we don't have enough budget. Like mm-hmm. I'm giving you everything I have to support these kids. And anytime that I say I need something more, it's like, but we don't have it, or it's not a way to give it to you. And I think specifically as a Black teacher, if you show strength, if you show that you're really good at classroom mm-hmm. management, you're really good at supporting students with a lot of social emotional needs, then you just get more of those kids, more of those responsibilities, not more resources mm-hmm. to be able to do the job. It's just like, okay, well, you're good at this. You can have all the kids with behavior problems. If you give me more and more responsibilities with fewer supports, mm-hmm. and I'm not incentivized. I don't want a good job. I don't want a pizza party. I don't want teacher of the year. For me, I want monetary compensation for my time. You can't give me that, then I don't want to do it. Like, there's only so long that I'm going to let you bleed me of everything that mm-hmm. I have because I care so much about kids with no direct benefit to me. Mm-hmm. So I started to feel depressed while teaching, feeling like I'm doing this thing, but it doesn't make sense. Like mm-hmm. in the larger scheme of public education, Milwaukee kids are doing horrible. And my little drop in the bucket of helping these 32 kids this school year is not making a difference. Like if you look at the big picture, mm-hmm. it's not doing anything. You need hundreds of people to support 32 kids in order to make an impact on, I don't know, what is it? 300,000 Milwaukee students are at MPS.
Yep.
And listening to like all of the, what is it? When there's a call on Thursday with central office, the board calls, it's just like people fighting. Like there's no agreement on even what the kids need. And if parents are bold enough to stand up and say something, it seems like the parent concerns are, thank you so much for sharing that. And then they move on. It's like an acknowledgement of hearing that there's a problem mm-hmm. with no remedy for the problem and then no budget for the problem. And then, okay, now we have to have another meeting. And it's like, I'm a part of something that doesn't work and that doesn't align mm-hmm. with like my values or who I am. I never want to be doing something just to say that I was doing it. So I felt like if I want to make a commitment to support Black kids in Milwaukee and their families, because I also don't think that school structures do a good job at supporting mm-hmm. Black families. If they came from a poor school situation, it's just like trauma. Parents don't even know what to say because we use a lot of language, a lot of acronyms,
jargon, lots of.
Right. And even if kids get an IEP, parents don't even really understand what is this? What does this mean? What are you going to do to support my kid?
Yep.
If what you say you're going to do is not working, what are you going to do this year to adjust it, mm-hmm. to really make some progress? Like, I don't think enough Black parents have a clear understanding. Even if you make it to IEP, what that means, what the implications are, mm-hmm. who do you hold responsible mm-hmm. if what they say they're going to do is not working, without feeling like I'm not important here, or like what I have to say is not valid. Because even the structure of a meeting, it's like 8 mainly white people sitting with you to talk about what is wrong with your child, going through everything so fast.
Oh my gosh.
And yes. parents don't say anything a lot of time. They're just like, uh-huh. Because you don't want to seem ignorant, or like you don't understand, or you don't have the tools to support your kid. You mm-hmm. don't want to make it seem like what you know is not good enough, so you don't speak up.
You don't know how to advocate for them at all.
No.
And it's troubling. And then I think it leads to other parents being resistant to even being checked out, you know, having exactly. a kid checked out. And granted, you got the problem with labeling sometimes and things mm-hmm. like that, but also it makes sense sometimes in certain instances to actually get it checked out so you can actually, you know something. But then when you go in there blindly with no support and no education on it, does a student really fare better?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like in terms of that. So that's crazy. So you starting the bookstore was like,
I want to do something like outside of the structure of systems that people do not trust. Just as one person, was something tangible that I can do, even if I only help 100 parents mm-hmm. in a year. That's more than I'm doing at work every day and feeling drained and like mm-hmm. I don't have anything else to give. So it was me really thinking, I hate what I'm doing. I'm wasting my time. What can I do by myself without needing permission to do what mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. is a better option?
And then your input actually matters mm-hmm. because, like you said, when they have those board meetings and you have parents come in, they just like, what do they say? They just basically like, okay, thank you for sharing, mm-hmm. but nothing really happens. And you kind of see that in education with when the administrators have meetings with their teachers. They say they want teacher input, but a lot of times it does fall on deaf ears, so they just give them the, oh, thank you for that. You know, mm-hmm. we'll look into that, but it's never really looked into. And it's not to down talk anybody, but you know, just being around education for a while, you've been there for a while, and me as well, that's what I've seen. So to hear you say that, I know I'm not going crazy. You know, so
that's what I thought I was doing, working in a school, going crazy. And then hearing about some of your experiences, it's like, oh, it's the same.
I got a host.
I didn't make any mistakes. It's the same,
right? Absolutely. Public, charter, private, you see it all.
Mm-hmm.
So the name Rooted,
I thought the name of the bookstore was going to be Binge Lit. And then when I started just sharing it with family, they were like, well, what does that even mean? I'm like, okay, if you don't know what it means, I got to mm-hmm. explain it a million times. Scratch that. And then I still didn't even have like a full concept that I wanted to open up a bookstore, because mm-hmm. I started with doing private tutoring for a couple years.
Okay.
And then someone else was like, oh, this is like a plant, like you planted a seed not even knowing how it was gonna go and your students are like blossoming. And I'm like, that makes sense. Okay. So we're starting a little foundation mm-hmm. of trying to do something different in the city. I love being from Milwaukee. I know that Milwaukee doesn't have a good reputation for doing beautiful things for Black people and Black kids, so Rooted felt right to me because mm-hmm. I'm from the city, I love the city, I'm invested in the city, mm-hmm. and I want to see better.
That makes sense. And I like the analogy, the planting of the seed and things like that. I really like the analogy, especially given the fact that you're a native here, too. And like you said, sometimes you don't see a lot of, and I don't want to discredit anybody, but you don't see a lot of people, and maybe it's just me, maybe I don't see a lot of people, like you said, trying to do something wonderful, especially for the kids in terms of, in the families.
Mm-hmm.
We have different organizations within Milwaukee that are trying to do some of these things, but sometimes I think they get a little bit far removed from the mission, that is more so just an image, you know, of something. You know what I mean? Not to discredit them, but
I do feel like that happens where you like have an idea and then I don't know exactly what the trajectory is, but you like have a really valid, honest idea. And then 5, 6, 7 years later, you turn around like, dang, how did I get to this place? And I do think really intentionally about that a lot mm-hmm. with opportunities that come up for the bookstore or for the nonprofit. Like, I'm really hesitant to commit to things if I'm not 100% sure of, like, okay, if I do this today, in a year from now, where am I going to be? Like, am I going to be upset with myself because there was this opportunity, I pursued it, and then it's like, how did I get here and how do I get out?
Right. So you, so that means you're very particular about who you work with.
Absolutely.
And who you partner with. And my wife would call me critical because I feel the same way in terms of who I want to mesh with. You see her smiling over there. In terms of who I want to partner with and things like that. So I commend you for doing that because you don't want to get lost in some of those things or being tied to certain people and things like that that don't really align with your mission and your vision.
Sometimes I hate it though. Because when you're trying to build a for-profit business, it is about the money. Like, you don't start a business because you don't want to make money. Not a for-profit, you don't. So a lot of no's means that, at least to me, like, a lot of no's, other people hear about your no, and then they may not approach you. And if I continue to, like, be really steadfast to the mission, but the bag is over here, like, how long can I just
it's tempting.
Push the bag? Like, can I just do a little bit? Do I gotta do all of what you want me to do? Yeah, that's stressful when you have rent and employees and payroll and lights and everything that comes with the business and really just running off of faith. Like, I want to do this thing. It's got to work. How is it going to work? I know you got to sell this many books to be able to cover these things. But if customers are not coming in off the street, how do you make it work? Because that's not how a bookstore sustains. It's not the mom coming in just to buy one or two books. It's corporate partnerships. It's big sales that really sustain a store. And if I say no, that's like a $40,000 sale that I don't get. How long can I sustain if I don't do things that I may not want to do, kind of thing?
It's a tough decision. I'll tell you that. It's definitely a tough decision, especially like you said, when you see the bag over there.
Right.
But yeah, so I don't know. So why do you feel, because I know you do the rooted for, you know, the black and brown people for sure. Why do you think it's so important for black kids specifically to see themselves in literature and to see black authors and things like that?
I think it's important for black kids because I think black kids aspire to be what they see. We hear so many kids say they want to be a rapper. They want to be an athlete.
Absolutely.
Kids do say sometimes, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. And then they start to talk to people who do those things. And it seems so hard to be a lawyer. Like, kids ask all the time, how long you got to go to school for that? As if, what would you be doing otherwise? Like, running away from the thing that you're meant to be doing. You're just wasting the time that you would have spent going to school anyway.
Right.
But kids don't understand that. They're trying to figure out how long it's going to take to be this thing. They want to be looked up to. They want to make enough money, more than enough money, to live a lifestyle that they want to live. They don't want to be suffering. They don't want to be poor. They don't want to, like, I don't think black kids intentionally choose to do things that are wrong because they know inherently that it's wrong. It's a way to end whatever suffering or poverty that they experience. It's a path that's not going to take 10, 15, 20 years. So I think if you give kids a chance to see just a wider representation of what it means to be a black kid in a book, not all black kids in a book are going to die or experience a loss or be in trouble or just be a background character. They can be leads as well. They can tell wide stories from all over the world. A black kid in America is not the same as a black kid in Africa or a black kid anywhere in the world, just to show them a much wider lens of what it means to be a black person living in happiness or joy or whatever story they choose to read. And I think when you show a black kid that they can be an author, then kids will be more bold about wanting to be a storyteller. I think everybody knows black people in general are genius. Like, everything that we do amazing when we do it 100%. So the kids that want to be a rapper, you're a storyteller, you're a poet. Why don't you put that mm-hmm. in a book? Mm-hmm. You might not get a record deal. Everybody is not going to be Chris Brown. Everybody is not mm-hmm. going to be someone with $1 million contract for a record label right. or a basketball team. Like, we want to do these things where mm-hmm. the odds are so small to be that thing. But if you write down your story, you know how many books you can sell over time and make money for a long time?
Residual.
Right. Just from mm-hmm. like putting down something from your brain on paper and Absolutely. Just sharing it with people. I don't think people think about like, what can I be doing right now, even as a child who wants to make money? Write a book about your everyday experience mm-hmm. or write a book about something that you enjoy or a dream that you had and talk about it mm-hmm. and sell it today and make money.
Right. And what you said was exactly spot on true, because Black people have always been good at storytelling. Like, always. Like, mm-hmm. even when they're little. Think about when the little kids are trying to tell you a story. It's super intriguing. You may not even understand everything, but they're so detailed. They're mm-hmm. so passionate about it. And that's super, super important to me, because I think, what they used to call them, the griots or mm-hmm. griots, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Those are the storytellers. And I think my sister had mentioned that a while ago. And I was just like, when we listen to somebody tell a story, like, you've been telling stories this whole time. You know what I mean? So the proof is in the pudding. So you walking me through all these things, I can see and I can envision it. And I think that's, we should get the kids to be writing more, but a lot of times they're not writing as much as anymore. Like, do you provide anything for like the kids to start writing and things like that?
I think the bookstore is really what brings people into the space. Mm-hmm. Like, if you know nothing, you know that we sell books.
Right.
So you're coming in looking for a book. Mm-hmm. Normally, parents will share, my kid is a reluctant reader, or I don't know their reading level. And then we're able to have conversations about, gotcha. Okay, well, we can support with just a baseline assessment to mm-hmm. give you a better idea of what level they're on. So if you're looking for a book, mm-hmm. this is what a range where they can mm-hmm. read it independently. And then parents are like, oh, well, do you teach reading? Absolutely. We have gotcha. Read and tutoring. Or, hey, my kid likes to write. Is there a writing camp? Absolutely. We do these writing things. So just, I think the bookstore is more like an easy place for parents to come in, like low stress, low pressure, just come into the space. And mm-hmm. then we can have deeper conversations once they've opened the door, not me leading with, oh my God, you need to focus on reading for your baby. They mm-hmm. know that it's important. Just open up the door and let them start the conversation.
Okay. And so who do you typically see frequent the bookstore? Do you see a lot of, you know, Black and brown people coming in and frequent it? Let's be real. I know.
So it's not my target customer, but uh-huh. the people who pay rent are white people.
Gotcha.
White people with Black kids that mm-hmm. they've adopted
okay.
or mixed mm-hmm. race kids mm-hmm. or white kids mm-hmm. who they just want to make sure that they are bringing in a range of representation to Black kids in their household, because at school or where they live, they don't see a lot of Black or Latinx students or mm-hmm. kids or people in general. They're trying to be intentional about bringing in those stories or those narratives into their household.
So do you get a lot of like teachers that come in and want to bring, you know, purchase some books for their classroom, library, things like that?
I get a lot of teachers,
okay.
but it really mainly is just like parents
okay.
or parents who've adopted mm-hmm. Black kids, and they just hear about the store. I really think wherever people adopt kids from, like, we must be on a sheet of paper that's like, if they need a book, come to
this
read
is
it.
This is a resource. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. What events do you typically have here? And then I got one more question for you.
Okay. We do mainly author events. Mm-hmm. So both local authors and national authors. Mm-hmm. If a big author is doing a stop in Chicago and they want to come to Milwaukee, mm-hmm. they typically come to Rooted
okay.
for a children's book author. Mm-hmm. And then local authors who write a book, we always welcome them to come in to do an author read,
okay.
talk about what you're doing, gather your community. We'll let our community know what you have going on so people can support your work. Because if someone writes a book mm-hmm. and people don't buy it, then they don't want to talk about it.
Right.
So like, how can I get you excited and enthused about the work that you're doing? It's mm-hmm. one thing to write the book, but you also have to sell it. So we got to get you talking about
Agreed.
What you have going on, feeling comfortable mm-hmm. and being able to say, I can speak to an audience.
Gotcha.
And once people come to the store and do an author event, we always have schools, daycares, different people mm-hmm. trying to figure out, how can I get an author in my school? We send them to whoever is looking to have events for their schools or mm-hmm. parents or daycares, just to help give exposure to the gotcha. Author, but also to let people know you don't have to look for a really big author. You have people with talent in Milwaukee who
that
are doing
can.
Work.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, my final question. You're on the What's Your Motive podcast. So what's your motive?
What is my motive? My motive is for parents to reduce the amount of excuses that people have. So if you're not having the best experience in a public or private school, mm-hmm. Like learning environment with your kid, there's not a lot of places where mm-hmm. a Black parent can go to get support for their kid from a Black or brown person.
Mm-hmm.
Most educators are white. So even if you see somebody outside of school for support, they're going to be a white person. Mm-hmm. Everybody doesn't want that experience for their kid. So I'd love to provide just an additional resource or mm-hmm. an avenue for parents. And just so parents can't say, I didn't do it because there wasn't,
gotcha.
Because I'm here. So rather you choose to come and check out what options we have available or mm-hmm. give it a chance. That's a personal choice, but it won't be because you didn't know that there was another resource available.
Gotcha.
You can't do much about what happens at school as a parent. Like, you just don't have a lot of autonomy mm-hmm. or choice, right, or control of what happens mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis at school, but you do have control over how you spend your time and your resources when your kids are with you and you know that there's a problem.
Absolutely. And you heard that. No excuses.
No excuses.
No excuses. No excuses. So I just want to say thank you for letting me come down to Root It. Very, very appreciative to be able to have this conversation with you. Wish we could have got some of that off-camera footage, but that was great, too. So thank you for letting me interview you and talk to you. It's great to hear about this space and actually come down here. And my hope is that, you know, maybe we will touch base about the tutoring and some of those things so we can collaborate.
Absolutely.
All right. So until next time, what's your motive?